Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players, uncover their stories, and discover what makes them tick. If you love guitar, music, and the backstory of people's lives, stick around. You're in the right place. Hi, this is Craig. Just want to let you know you can now advertise here on Everyone Loves Guitar podcast. For more information, go to everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. That's everyonelovesguitar.com/advertise. Hey, everybody. This is Craig Garber. Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar. And I just want to give a shout out to Steve Mazur from Our Lady Peace for hooking me and Lawrence Katz up. Today is my guest from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. Comes from Atlanta, Georgia. Grew up listening to Iron Maiden, Ozzy, Van Halen, and Zeppelin. But he's actually more into BMX and skateboarding than guitar. He did get the bug to start playing in high school when he heard Zeppelin's Good Times, Bad Times, and he started taking lessons. After high school, he went to Berkeley, moved back to Atlanta. Then he moved out to LA with a buddy of his in 97. And then he joined the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones as a full band member in 2000 and moved back to Boston. When the band took a break in 2003, Lawrence moved back to LA. Dude, you move a lot. Like, I can't even keep track of this shit. Built a studio and started doing sessions and writing. And then he got into doing commercials, film, and TV licensing. The Boss Tones then reunited. And since then, Lawrence has done 3 records with them and a lot of shows. The band's doing well once again. He's also toured with Latin artists Beto Cuevas and Daniel Powder. And he recently left LA, shocking, after 20 years to move again across the country, this time to Philadelphia. And you got to have like fucking move or two left in you, man. I feel it. I think like,
I may go back to LA at some point. But
there you go.
Maybe back to Atlanta would make sense probably at this rate. But.
Did you, was Aaron McLean on that gig with you, or before or after you with Beto Cuevas?
I don't know Aaron, so I can't answer okay. that.
He plays with Air Supply now. Good, a guy from LA.
He's a guitar player.
Yeah.
I bet he probably came in after me.
Yeah.
Because when I joined up with that, in fact, and bring Joel back into the mix, I think Joel hooked me up with that. I think that was Beto's first kind of foray into the solo musician world, solo artist world.
Gotcha.
So,
all righty, man.
Real quick, let me correction from
the intro. Please.
It wasn't that I heard Good Times, Bad Times. It was that I saw some older kids play Good Times, Bad Times.
Oh, okay.
And it was unusual because in my high school, there was zero music education, but there were some older kids that were just great musicians. And, you know, I remember it was like a talent show and they played Good Times, Bad Times. They played YYZ.
That's my whole youth.
I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was like, you know, that was it for me basically.
Very cool.
Like, I mean, the dude playing guitar, and I still, you know him somewhat to this day, a guy named John Gillespie. He was Jimmy Page as far as I was concerned.
As far as he was concerned, too, I bet.
Well, it was interesting, though, because as kids, you know, you kind of like, you start taking on these personas. And then you kind of start looking like these people, too. I mean, like, there was another kid who may as well have been Paul McCartney. You know, like it was kind of unusual and very cool.
Awesome, man. So. When you went to Berkeley, did you know at that point you were going to play guitar for a living?
I don't know that I knew what a living was.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I just knew I wanted to play guitar, and I'd kind of like, you know, through high school, I started to kind of identify with being a guitar player. Hmm. And I grew up in a, family that was pretty, very pro education, to say the least, you know, and so college was kind of, you know, kind of like you're going to college kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I started, you know, I started school in private schools and didn't kind of really cut it through there, and then ended up in this public school, which is where I started to get turned on to some of the kids that were doing things that maybe kids shouldn't be doing, but also turning into great musicians. So, you know, long story short, I started, you know, my parents were, like I say, very pro college. I wasn't that interested in going to college, but didn't have any real kind of like course of action to say why I didn't want to go to college. So I started college. And then once I got into college, I realized why I didn't want to go to college. And then I made a deal with my parents that if I kind of like excelled to a certain place at the regular college, then I could transfer over to Berkeley.
Yeah.
So I did one semester in a school very close to where you are in Lakeland, Florida.
Oh yeah. UCF. Where'd you go?
It was Lakeland, Florida Southern College.
What the hell were you doing down there?
Dude, I mean, honestly, it was the place that
where is the most marijuana smoked in Florida?
Yeah, well, wherever marijuana was being smoked, I was going to be able to find. So, but no, I remember like my parents like hooked up with like a college kind of counselor sort of thing, and they were doing some sort of music business program, and that was going to be the kind of like. The you know, my parents didn't understand at the time what it meant to be, you know, what being a professional musician meant, and you know, you can't blame them. They weren't like, oh, you're not going to do this, but they were looking for ways to kind of make some concessions so that you know, that you could make a living doing it. And they had some sort of music business program, and that's what I started doing, I suppose.
It's funny.
And it took about 3 months. It took about 3 minutes for me to know I didn't want to be there, and 3 months to get out of there.
I've spoken to several guys who they've like negotiated Berkeley as an option. You know,
that's kind of what it is. Yeah. And truth be told, right out of high school, I don't think that I would have been able to get into Berkeley necessarily.
Right.
So I got a little bit of, you know, a little bit of music education at that college also. Okay. And prior to that, I, you know, even though I had taken lessons, you know, my kind of background was more or less, you know, learning songs off of records.
Right, right.
Literally records.
Yeah, I know. I remember those days, man. Let's talk about these moves. Oh, by the way, first of all, I want to congratulate you because you're a new dad, man. So.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations and Godspeed.
I appreciate it. Indeed. Hanging on tight. I got so far so good. I got pretty lucky. I'll knock on wood, but she's super easy and super awesome.
Wait a minute. Let's qualify that. And how old is she?
Almost 20 months to the day.
Oh, I thought she was like a brand new. Okay, that's pretty good.
No,
she's good.
20 months. She's
that's great.
Just a little behind Adam's kid, basically.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Very cool, man. So let's talk about some of these moves. So tell me what prompted each one of these moves. And let's start with your first one, Atlanta, after finishing Berkeley, which is basically back home, I guess, right?
I think, yeah, that's right. It was going home. I think that the logic, if there was any, and it's still kind of a regret to this day, to be perfectly honest with you. I think that the idea was big fish, small pond. Mm-hmm. But looking back, it was probably, you know, safety.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, post Berkeley, I didn't have a real good vision of what to do or what you could do.
Yeah. Well, how would you?
So, no, I don't know. I have no idea how it could. You know, it's a spin cycle too. You know what I mean? Like you come spinning out of there and you're like, well, wait a minute. I've been kind of in like, you know, this kind of fantasy world on some level and this kind of bizarro world on another level.
Yeah.
So you go from kind of like full on, you know, practicing 8 to 12 hours a day and then trying to figure out how you're supposed to make a living doing that.
Yeah.
So
I think that's the norm. Like once in a blue moon, I'll meet these people. They were like, yeah, when I was 23, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And I'm like, wow. You know,
yeah, that's insane. I mean, that's unique.
Yeah, because you know, most 23-year-olds just like I didn't really have any awareness about anything until I was like in my mid-30s, man. So I'm like, wow, good for you, really.
And that was also kind of, I mean, that's part of the reason why I ended up staying in Berkeley till the end, because I didn't really know what I wanted to do.
Yeah,
so
makes sense.
That kind of gave me free rein just to, you know, poke around in a lot of different directions. But at the same time, you know, it's admirable when you see people that are headstrong and definitive about their path.
At that young of an age, especially, man.
Indeed. And you know, and I don't, there's been, I don't think the one way is right, one way is wrong.
No, it's
so by any stretch. So, you know, you go through and the truth is, I suppose, is that if you are headstrong about one thing, then you're closing yourself off to other things. So, yeah. But it's, you know, it's kind of the desert island thing, right? You get on the island, you sink the ship, and you survive or you don't.
Yeah. I think we're all just working our way through shit, man. Yeah, one day at a time, you know?
Fair enough. I know I am.
And then you went out to LA from Atlanta, which was a really bold move. What was that all about?
Well, I'd been in Atlanta kind of kicking it around, playing in bands, doing everything from working in bars, doing my own band, to playing blues gigs, to teaching guitar. And I had a buddy of mine, I was telling you, that I had known in college. And he came through town with – he moved to L.A. right out of Boston, basically. He's one of these dudes that has a pretty defined vision of – how he wants his life to be and what he wants to do. And he's also got the skills to back it up. He went out to LA and was doing kind of the audition circuit. Actually wasn't even doing the audition circuit. I think he was filling in for a friend. So a friend could audition for an somewhat unknown artist at the time named Alanis Morissette. So he's not even trying to get the gig. He ends up getting the gig. And anyway, back to the other question, he ends up coming through Atlanta the first time, you know, they're in a van, the second time they're in a bus, the third time they're in, you know, the Mega Dome and a whole fleet of, you know, crew, et cetera. It looked real appealing. So then he was like, he basically connected me with a friend of his that had a position available that I played, a guy named Darren Johnson, who was also just a ridiculous musician. He actually played with, Miles Davis when he was, you know, early 20s.
Guitar?
And his wife, no, he was a keyboard player, still is.
Wow.
So he was a friend of my friend, Chris Chaney is the other dude's name. And he was putting together a thing with his wife, and that was the kind of impetus to move out to LA.
Getting hooked up with this keyboard player.
Hooked up with Darren. Yeah, Chris hooked me up with Darren. Chris also had, you know, a room available in the house that he was living in, and yeah, so that was it. I mean, at that point, I was hitting walls in Atlanta anyway. And like I said before, probably never should have moved back to Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know, because there was a really cool thing happening in Boston around that time period in the early 90s in kind of the indie rock world, kind of even just coming off of like the Pixies and Dinosaur Jr. and things like that. Yeah. And like there was just a cool – even the Boston's for that matter.
Yeah.
It was just – Boston was happening in the indie rock world. And, you know, had I stayed, who knows. But
yeah.
I didn't.
Then you got the gig with the Boston's and you did move back to Boston.
Yeah, years later though. I mean, there was some ups and downs before then.
But what was that? What prompted that move? Is this just because that's where the Boston's home base was? Or?
That was the Boston's home base. Exactly. And we had toured for a while I was still living in LA and it didn't really matter where I was because it was get on a plane, get on a bus. We kind of shut the touring cycle down and started working on a new record. And I wanted to be part of the record, so I moved out. Moved back to Boston. It was happening in Boston.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Right, so I moved. I basically, and I'm sure you've heard this story 1,000 times. I moved to Boston, and then 9/11 happened. So that, like, you know, it changed everything.
Yeah.
For everyone. Some more than others, fortunately, you know.
Yeah.
Not extreme for me.
So then the Boston's take a break and you're like, fuck it, I'm going back to LA.
Yeah, it was cold in Boston. and you know, the break, you know, could be, you know, that's also some kind of 9/11 fallout too.
Yeah.
You know, just everything changed.
Yeah.
You know, the touring landscape changed, the economy changed, the, you know, maybe even the desire changed. It got harder to travel.
Yeah.
And Yeah, so at that point, instead of staying in Boston, there was nothing for me to stay in Boston for at that point.
So you just needed to get
back to LA.
The work was in LA for you.
Indeed. Yeah. And I'd already lived in LA and probably was ultimately more connected to LA and had more friends there. And you know, LA is LA. There's good reason to be there.
Sure.
Particularly at that time.
And then this recent move to Philly, that was just something for like family or your wife or something like that, if I remember.
My wife, who's also an artist, a fashion designer, was just basically offered a job that you couldn't turn down.
Great.
So should we, you know, so here we are basically.
All right. So let's go back to the Boston. In 2003, what they took a break. What was that? Like, is there an official reason for that or something you could talk about without?
I think that people were getting burnt out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, particularly, you know, at that time I hadn't been in the band that long. So I was, you know, I was obviously still fired up to keep it going. But I think at the time, you know, they came off of huge success, did a follow-up record that came out as the music industry was kind of starting to, you know, eat itself, Napster, et cetera.
Yeah.
The methodology to break records was just not, you know, the infrastructure had just changed and things were different. And, you know, they came off of a record that sold, you know, multi-platinum and then, you know, went into like the music industry is just dying. It's like the whole Seagram's Universal thing. Their team disappeared and that record did well, but certainly not as well. And then the next record, things just start to fade out even more than 9/11. And then just it just started to become work, I think, is probably more the thing.
Yeah, I totally get that. Then you got into licensing music, which as an outsider coming from the business world, I think is, you know, that would be my number one goal if I was getting into the music business, quite frankly, because it's, you know, sort of mailbox money and you can create an asset base that lasts forever, pretty much.
Yeah.
Can you share a couple of experiences like how you got into it and things that have happened that are interesting or cool?
I think that, you know, the licensing world, again, kind of on the heels of radio on the decline, the music business on the decline, kind of the value of music on the decline. It's kind of like it just started to get kind of, it just turned into kind of a popular thing, I guess, around the songwriting circles, I suppose, where it was an outlet, you know, it was an outlet for artists on some level to get recognition, and it was an outlet for you to make music and not even have to be that connected to it necessarily as a you know, kind of a life's purpose and a, you know, your vision as an artist.
Yeah.
You know, you're providing, you know, on some level it's a great thing because I love to make music and I love writing music and I love producing music. There is a low-lying fruit element to it too, because you're providing people with a kind of a path of least resistance to have music used in places where the budgets aren't big enough to use whatever the huge band is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's why a lot of unsigned or lesser-known artists will kind of push their music through those channels.
How'd you get turned on to that in the first place?
I think as I started writing with people and producing, there were just different, you know, there's artists around LA that kind of, that's kind of their game. Hmm. And they'll do it with different producers. And I became a guy that would co-write and produce tracks. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, sorry. Are you still doing that now?
I do, yeah. I do a decent amount of it, and it's good.
Yeah.
Again, you know, I don't see it as much as, you know, I'm not. It's not change the world music necessarily, but it is making music, and I like to make music, so it feels good to me. You know, as long as it feels good, it feels sincere. You know, it's also, you know, you're writing and producing from a place of a you know, it's not total inspiration and total vision. You know what I mean? You're fulfilling a need in a marketplace on some level. And so you're writing within those parameters, but that's okay too. Cause I don't always need to express myself to the deepest depths of my soul. And it's good practice to write music with some sort of, you know, assignment in mind even.
It's almost like being I just thought of this as you were talking. It's almost like being a session writer.
And yeah, in some ways.
Instead of being a session,
you're being commissioned on some level to fulfill a need that people want.
Yeah.
And you're, you know, it's making music is the goal to me.
Yeah. That's great.
I'm not necessarily trying to impose my life's views on everybody as much as I am just trying to make music.
Yeah, but if doing this is an opportunity to do something related to music that will allow you to then spend time doing things that does represent, you know, your life's mission or something that's near and dear to your heart, that's great.
Absolutely.
You know, I think it's wonderful.
And you know, it's all pieces of the same puzzle, I suppose. You know, you got to work and, you know, I'm not 23.
Yeah. So. No, but I mean, someone's got to make the music. They're going to pay somebody. If you've got the ability and a skill set and a talent and a connection, why not you?
Indeed.
You know,
indeed.
I think it's great.
Other side of that, I produce records with artists who genuinely do want to express themselves and, you know, live in that world of real, like kind of, I don't want to call one real music and one not real music, but, you know, making real records in the traditional sense of making a record.
Yeah, I think it's real important that you do stuff. Plus, the other thing is, at least my limited exposure to the way the business works, you're going to be out there working with people and they're going to say, hey, I need a guitar player for my gig, or my buddy's got an opening. You know what I mean? So, and I think that's an important thing to take into consideration.
The most important thing is just to keep moving.
Yeah.
And do things that you can. The most important thing is to continue to make as much music as possible.
Right.
You know, on some level, regardless of what the purpose is, what the outlet is, the idea is to continue to flex that muscle and exercise that muscle and get better and better at making music.
Absolutely. And nothing
because
happens.
You know, you can paint a billboard one day and you can, you know, paint the Sistine Chapel the next.
Right.
You're still painting.
And nothing happens when you're sitting in your house. So yeah,
that's right.
Keep moving. I agree with you. Are you working on anything now that you're excited about?
I just moved.
So putting your new studio together.
I'm working on rebuilding some roots and getting my studio rebuilt here after having it in LA forever. I produced a record recently, an artist named J.R. Moore that's just came out 2 weeks ago. Kind of a country / Americana thing. I have a writing partner that I'm constantly doing records with for the one of the main outlets is a company called Position Music that's kind of what we're talking about, the licensing stuff. But, you know, don't get me wrong. These are real productions. I mean, they're full produced, you know, radio ready record quality sounding tracks.
Very cool.
And then there's that project I was telling you about, The Whole Damn Mess.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was cool, man.
Thanks.
That was really cool. Talk about that, man, because I really dug that.
It's great. I love it. That also came out of the same writing production partner I was just talking about, a guy named C. Todd Nielsen is his name. He and I met a dude named Don Miggs, and we were basically just getting together for a songwriting session just to see where it went. He was an artist or is an artist, I should say. And we just started writing and it started sounding great. It started to feel really honest and really genuine. And it was more than just kind of, you know, because in LA you have a lot of these kind of like producers and writers and they jump from producer and writer to producer and writer and you just make tons of music. Maybe it shows up. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe there's a connection. Maybe there's not. But the three of us had a really great connection. So we just kept writing and we made that record. It's called The Queen and the Outcast. And it's something I'm super proud of.
Man, I would encourage anybody listening to check it out. It's called, the name of the band is The Whole Damn Mess. It's Queen and the Outcast.
That's correct. Yeah.
And it was, and the Outcast. It was a shame because Lawrence, the band was here in Tampa. And I literally, they were playing the same night that I had already committed to going to see. It was Jeff Fielder was in town with Amy Ray. And so I unfortunately missed it, but I checked out the record. It's really good, man. It was definitely check it out. It's called The Whole Damn Mess. It really good music.
There's some B-sides from that are coming out here in the next couple of weeks also.
Well, the videos in that were really strong too. Like it was, you know, they don't.
Oh yeah. The
great John production,
got,
man.
He's got some vision when it comes to that stuff for sure.
It looked like big budget old school videos. It was really cool. That like, and you had that one theme of like the angry sort of like, you know, preacher who maybe shouldn't
That's
be a
right.
preacher dude with the gun. That was really, and that was like the theme. I really
and
dug that.
The record is thematic also.
Yeah.
But I'll let the listener just choose their own journey. But yeah, it's, man. All of the songs, you know, are a theme. Basically,
really good stuff, and check out the videos too. The videos are great.
Thanks, man.
And I'm not just. I would say nothing if I didn't.
But that was. I appreciate that. That was fun because that was truly kind of just having the opportunity to explore. That
are you going to tour some more?
I'm sorry.
Are you going to play some more gigs?
We've already. We're playing a gig in LA on January 5th at the Troubadour.
That's awesome.
And we're about to gear up and do another record.
That's awesome, man.
That's purely for the passion. That's, you know, again, like what we were talking about before.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's defined what the objective is. Sometimes it's just kind of, you know, roll your sleeves up and see what happens.
That's great, man. That's really cool. Man, so you grew up in Atlanta. What was your childhood like?
I had a great childhood. Great family dynamic. You know, Atlanta was small town feeling at the time.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Go anywhere, but, you know, like... I could ride my bike anywhere by myself. Everything was great. And then the Wayne Williams murders happened and it was do you know where your children are at 7 o'clock?
Wow.
You remember that by chance?
I don't, man. You know what? I haven't watched news in like, I stopped watching news when I was about 20.
Well, exactly. Well, this was about,
no, seriously.
This was like 1978.
Oh,
it was a big thing at the time, but I'm being somewhat facetious, but no, I mean, it was great. I mean, I grew up in a little neighborhood right in town and it was awesome.
You had an older brother who got you into music. Any other siblings?
Just he and I.
Does he play?
He does play guitar now, actually. He does indeed. And he has a band with some of his buddies and they do, you know, kind of just fun party gigs. Nothing too serious.
Very cool.
So not serious. They're called the Goat Rodeo.
The Goat Rodeo. Shout out to the Goat Rodeo. There you go, man. I love that name.
He'll enjoy that.
The Goat Rodeo. Yeah. Tip your waiters and waitresses.
That's right.
What kind of work did your folks do? You said they were academics?
My dad, in the early part of my life, my dad owned a couple of movie theaters in Atlanta.
Wow. That's really cool.
Then changed careers pretty dramatically after that. He opened a used restaurant equipment business at one point. And then, and this is in the 80s, when it seemed like everybody was struggling. And then he took another career turn and he became, maybe at the time you call it a stockbroker, now you call it a financial planner.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, post 50 changed careers and, you know, basically completely did a 180. And did it all the way up until not that long ago when he retired probably post 80, basically.
Wow. So he's always been an entrepreneur.
He's 88 now. Yeah, I guess you could say.
That's really cool. Very cool. Was your mom work or she stayed home mom?
Nope. My mom worked. At one point as a kid, she was, for the most part of my life, she was working for the Red Cross. And then before that, she was working.
That's pretty cool that my mom works for the Red Cross. It's like, it's like almost
there's
like a holiness associated with that. Right. You know, it's like, oh, wow.
And then after that, she went back to school also kind of – did a 180 and became a therapist.
Oh my God. You're lucky you're not. Yeah, like, she, you know, she was a therapist. She, like when you were a kid, you'd probably be totally fucked up.
That's right. Well, she was still her. I mean, it takes one to know one.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure, bro.
It was good, though. It actually it became a good asset, actually, for me.
That's very cool, man.
We all need some therapy. Let's face it. Oh, God, yeah.
Are you kidding? How do you get through life without having therapy? I don't, at least a little bit. I don't know, man.
By my estimation, it's a luxury. Hang tight one second.
Yeah, man.
Are you good? Cool. No, we're good. Sorry.
Man, is there anything that you are looking forward to doing over the next few years or maybe even long-term if you have a vision for that musically?
Getting better is one thing. There's still live, you know, I still love to play live. I don't know that I would be able to do any heavy duty road work, but it always appeals to me on some level. I'm excited to continue with the Boss Johns. I'm excited to continue on all the projects that we've already discussed and just kind of let those things grow. Another thing that I've been getting more into is working closer with artists, you know, younger artists making their records, that kind of thing. And that's something I'd like to do more of for sure. That's super fulfilling, helping somebody fulfill a vision, basically.
That is cool, man. Hey, were there any like low points or obstacles that you had to deal with over your career, Lawrence, and how did you get through them? And it could be, you know, personal, music related, business related.
Nothing tragic, certainly nothing traumatic. You know, I guess on some one example is just like when I first moved out to LA, I kind of had a vision of what it would be and what it was supposed to be. Yeah. You know, I guess we'll call it expectations.
Yeah.
Realized pretty quickly that that wasn't the way it was. You know, as much as I had some cool experiences right out of the gate, then it kind of there was a bit of a decline, kind of the whole world of auditioning for people. I had a hard time going on all of these kind of what they would refer to as cattle call auditions. And it never appealed to me because there was just no connection. It felt like it was like they were all basically casting calls, right? Looking for the dude with the look on some level. And that was super counterintuitive to me. And but here I was kind of like, just me on an island, you know, that's what you do. You know, you either start your own band or, you know, you go on these auditions or maybe a friend of a friend gets you into a band kind of thing.
Sure.
So there was a while after I had done that a lot and it was super soul sucking for me. And at some point I was just like, there's just no way. I actually started walking dogs. My motto was that you got to pick up someone's shit. At least they may as well be cute and not talk back to you.
Dude, that
I should have put that on a card, by the way.
Yeah.
But then, and then some opportunity, you know, when I kind of said no to that whole side of like going out for the gig, quote unquote, then some shit kind of started happening. And I ended up touring and playing with a guy named Julian Coryell, who you'd be more than stoked to have on your show.
Yeah.
And talk about a guitar player.
Yeah.
He was doing a solo thing at the time and, you know, kind of a baby band thing, but the music was great. And it was, you know, a lot of times falling on deaf ears, but, you know, I had this vision that, you know, again, because my buddy was doing it on such a high level, it appeared as though that's, you know, it was the land of milk and honey that you just move out there and you get this gig and all of a sudden you're in a tour bus and life is good.
Yeah.
You're living in hotels, living the rock and roll dream. So it was quite the opposite with Julian, but the musical experience was so good.
Yeah.
So it was like, you know, I'd rather drive the van, load the van, load in all the gear, play for no one and play great music than, you know, have my ass wiped and stand on stage and feel zero connection to the music whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, and then post that, not long after that was when the Boss Johns thing happened. And that was that's kind of, that was the, that's the essence of what I just said. You know what I mean? There's, yeah. It's you're part of something.
Let me ask you this. Thanks for sharing that, by the way. Do you find, I have done this not often enough in my life, mm-hmm. where I've stopped doing something because I just like came to a conclusion. I was not, this was not me, and it was not.
Yeah. It's a hard one to come to.
It is. It's kind of like a, it's like breaking up a relationship, man. It's like when you realize that, man, this person's not for me, you know, you don't just the next day say, hey, I just realized that's you're not, right. You know, it's like a long,
I guess they call it being honest with yourself.
Yeah. You got to be real dysfunctional in the shit first. And
that's right.
You know, and like, just get like, man, I am really fucking sick of this, you know?
Yeah.
Do you find that, do you think that just in your opinion, when you gave that thing up, that you were at that point, now I'm going to sound like I'm from California, like sort of like a line.
Yeah, you're like you're opening yourself up to other opportunities.
Well, just, yeah, the universe is like now like aligning more with you because you're being a little more sincere with yourself.
No, there's no question. Yeah. I don't know that I was that elevated in my thought process at the time. You know what I mean? Maybe I should have been. I think that, but you know, listen, I say a lot, like no is a powerful answer.
Yes. Yeah. You know, no is a complete sentence.
Right. And if you're definitive about what you want, then that's what you'll attract.
Yeah.
If you're kind of like a bit of a butterfly, which, you know, admittedly I am, you know, I'm floating from opportunity to opportunity, hoping that one opens a door and kind of shows me exactly what it is that I want. So, you know, you can be defined in what you want, and that's probably what you'll get.
Yeah.
Or you can, you know, hop around a little bit. But, you know, it's hard because when you're out there, it feels like you have to say yes to everything.
Yes.
Because the negative side of that is that can come off as desperation.
Totally, yeah.
And desperation stinks.
Yeah. It's interesting what you said. You said I wasn't that elevated. Nobody is, because if you're that elevated, you don't go through that whole process. Then you're the guy and say, you know, this is not for me, done. You know, you don't have the dysfunctional breakup or the whole, you know, suffering. It's kind of a weird thing. I think it's one of those things where
they call it a narcissist, I think. No, I'm just kidding.
I don't think you could. I think that's one of those things where it's like one of the tuitions you have to pay in life. You're not going to know that shit until you know, like breaking up a relationship, you know, you're in one, you know what I've realized is not for me. And then, you know, the next time, you know, you don't wait as long or you.
Well, right. Also, you know, there've been times in my life where I'm very comfortable being uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah.
And that can be an issue.
Yeah.
All for fear of being uncomfortable. If that makes any sense.
No, it does. Well, I think it depends. Like with me, I had like a real stressful childhood. So that was my comfort zone.
Uh-huh. That's right.
You know, so
that's
for me, it was
you're comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah. Because that was my norm. And then I got older. I'm like, you know, I think, I need to fucking stop that.
Yeah. Fair.
You know, it's somebody else is going to bring stress into my life. Fine. But why would I continue doing it? You know,
that's right.
But it doesn't happen over. And it didn't for me anyway. I wish it did. So all this being said, if you had to go back and give advice to your younger self, what advice might you have given yourself, you know, personally or career-wise or anything?
Personally, what advice would I give myself? God, it's so tricky. You know, the thing that I struggled with the most, whether it was through Berkeley or moving to LA, is the intimidation factor. Yeah. You know, because there's just a lot of people. Again, this is kind of what we were talking about, the social media. You know, it looks like everybody's got it made. You know, there's a little bit of a woe is me factor when you get that intimidated.
Yeah.
But so I think that there would be a little bit of that, you know, like, you know, kind of, you know, like acknowledge that you're kind of like in the big leagues and it's going to, you know, you're going to get knocked down every so often and get back up and be confident in your abilities, basically.
So you would have given yourself permission to feel a little shaky and it's told yourself, hey, this is all par for the course.
But not let it shut me down so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, here's the crux of it is that, you know, you find music and it becomes your sanctuary. It becomes your safety zone. All of a sudden you found this like this place where you can go and you can kind of like, you know, escape, if you will. Right.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden there's things that are riding on it. Your livelihood's riding on it. All this is probably ego shit, but you know, you're judged based on your abilities, it's now getting fully exposed. It's not as much of a personal experience anymore. And it's tricky, you know, when your escape becomes your reality, it becomes a different dynamic.
Yeah.
And now you're getting, you know, the hardest thing for me, especially at Berkeley, was just getting judged.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, because there's just, you know, you're looking around and you've got these guys that are just like, you know, just like bizarro, like crazy, bizarrely good, like savants, you know what I mean? Like kind of geniuses. And you're like, so I guess then the advice would be like, you know, stay in your lane, do what you do. You don't you don't have to be as good as everybody else. You don't have to do what everybody else does. And you don't necessarily even have to prove anything. You just kind of have to be confident in what you do and who you are. And that's good enough.
That's really good advice, man. Stay in your lane. Did you go to
Sorry.
No, you go.
Well, no, I was just saying that, you know, there's space for everybody. And, you know, when you see that someone else is really doing great, doing what you're doing, it's not, the message isn't that, oh, the slot's already been taken.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, that doesn't mean, you know, and it's, you know, this is an optimistic, pessimistic kind of conversation on some level, you know, and having, Berkeley was like running the fucking gauntlet every day, you know, except you got a gig bag on your back. It's like, so that was a tricky situation for me. Like finding, it was when music became competitive, that's when it got fucking weird for me.
Yeah. But that's a good thing. That's a really smart thing you just said, you know, as far as there's space for everybody. Cause I think it's kind of like, you know, I've been a consultant for 20 years and a lot of people think, well, you know, someone else has this business. I can't do it. Or, you know, I feel people have money issues sometimes because they think like, you know, well, if I'm going to make money, someone else is not going to make money. You know, it doesn't work like that. It's not like if you get $10, somebody else loses $10. You know, it's right.
Well, and again, that's the whole Instagram thing. It's like the fucking Envygram. You know, it's like, oh man, he's doing everything. He's doing is amazing. You know, it's hard the way I'm wired. It's harder for me to turn that into inspiration and easier for me to turn it into intimidation.
Yeah, I get it. But there's a lot of, there's so many people on there that like my wife and I call like Facebook parents or Facebook, like, especially when you see like people our age and they get on there, like, this is a real funny one that I have these clients of mine and they don't listen to this show. So I could say this, they're not happily married. And like, they're always on there, like, and they're my age, I'm 55, maybe even older. And they're like, oh, my husband or my wife, they're so gorgeous and I love them. And then like when I'm on the phone, they're like, he's cheating on me.
It's smoke and mirrors. Yeah, it's like the Wizard of Oz. You look behind the curtain. It's like,
yeah.
Okay. Like, not what you thought.
Why would
you know, it's like, again, and yeah.
Like,
so
why would you be deluding yourself? Like, why don't you just deal with it and like, I don't know, leave? I'm not going to play armchair therapist, but like, you know, like, yeah, it's you look on there, it's like, wow, they live such charmed lives.
It's my metaphor for this in like kind of the LA world is like, you know, cause you come in contact with so many people, like even like a guy like Lyle, you know, they're breathing rarefied air. The dude played with Sting, you know, I mean, the list goes fucking on and on and on. Yeah. And, you know, just because you don't get those huge, huge opportunities. And this was kind of the shutdown thing for me with like watching my buddy and like play with Alanis, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It's like, even if you're not in the Foo Fighters or whatever it may be, it doesn't mean that you're not, that, that the things you're doing aren't just as cool on some level.
Or just as successful. You
know? Right. Again, that's the definition of success, right? Yeah. You know, I mean, like it's hard not to be allured by, you know, those kind of qualifications, yeah. You know, I mean, those are pretty amazing opportunities, but they're few and far between, and not everybody gets those opportunities, and you know, not everybody gets the same opportunities you do. So anyway, what I was saying is, yeah, the kind of the metaphor I use is like being at the bottom of the top of the mountain.
Yeah, the bottom of the.
So it's like you know, listen, if you get to base camp on Everest, you've gotten to a place that not a lot of people have gotten to.
Hell yeah!
If you get to the top of Everest, you know, you just narrowed that number down even more. But yeah, not everybody gets to the top of Everest.
Yeah,
and that's okay.
And you got to be okay with that.
Yeah, but if you get on the mountain, it's pretty good. And you know, being, again, back to kind of like what I would tell the younger self or whatever, is like, you know, kind of be happy with where you are, be satisfied with where you are. Because if you're always looking beyond where you are, then you're never going to be satisfied.
Yeah, man, for sure.
So, you know, it's yeah, I mean, it's that's just that.
Man, let's,
if you don't win a Grammy, you know, doesn't mean you're not making great music.
Oh, hell yeah. I know. So, the standards are ridiculously high. Well, the perceived standard of what,
right,
you know.
Right. It's perception. It's not even standards. No, it's just a different game. It ultimately has nothing to do with music. So you can be making great – you can make great music that nobody ever hears. And you can make shitty music that everybody hears and you win awards for it.
Right.
It's they're not mutually exclusive.
No, 100%.
Or is that they are mutually exclusive? Sorry, that phrase always confuses me.
You're all good, man.
But yeah, so you know, the goal, unless the goal changes, the goal is to be a great musician, and the goal is to make great music. And you know, if the goal changes to make tons of money and get all kinds of awards and be on, you know, everybody's radar as the it person, then there's a different, it's a different set of goals and a different set of objectives. Those haven't ever been my fuel necessarily.
Well, also, if those are your goals, you may be really successful and never even realize it because you didn't hit those targets.
Right. That's right.
Which
is
really a shame.
That's right.
Man, let's talk about, and I appreciate all that, man. Thank you.
Yeah, no worries.
Let's talk about gear for a minute.
Yeah, I like to talk about gear. Gear I like.
What's your go-to guitar right now, and what other couple of guitars would round out your top three, maybe?
Easy question. So everything of mine is in storage right now, except for a few items. And the guitar that I have been using the most is a Nash Tele.
Interesting.
Which I know. I love it.
Wow.
I love the dude, Britton Nash, the guy who's Bill Nash's son, who built it for me. And it's just an awesome guitar. But my kind of like the other guitar that I have with me is a 64 Jazzmaster, which is it's just the best.
Man, I saw you some pictures of you. You have a really nice looking like Black Beauty Les Pearl. Les Paul.
Yeah, that's kind of my main guitar for the Bostons. That's actually an awesome guitar. It's nothing crazy special. I think it was probably made in like 99, but I've played it on hundreds of Bostons gigs, and it's got like, I've worn a hole through the paint into the wood from my pick.
That's, you know, where the pick, so cool.
I basically have proven why they make pick guards. but yeah, no, that's a great guitar.
So, and you said
but truth be told, the reason why it's a great guitar is it's a played guitar.
Yeah.
To me, a played guitar is a great guitar, not a collectible guitar necessarily.
So it's like a best friend. You pick it up and you feel so good with it, kind of thing.
You know, I just think that instruments that are played get better and better.
Yeah. That Jazzmaster, the 65, when did you start?
64.
When did you start playing Jazzmasters? And what made you get that?
Oh, man. Swerve Driver, My Bloody Valentine, all that stuff was like the inspiration. Not that unique of a story, but I don't know. I had a buddy that had one. It's just a cool guitar. I also have a Jaguar from the same year.
Original pickups in there and everything?
Everything original, yeah.
Wow. That's really cool. That's pretty uncommon.
Different bridge, that Mastery bridge, which is a popular kind of retrofit kind of thing.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's a great guitar. I've used it on a lot of Boston's records too, just, recording, but it's definitely not a touring guitar for that gig at least.
What would you say the best guitar and the best amp you've ever owned?
Oh, man. I would say that Jazzmaster is the best guitar.
Wow. Okay. That's badass.
I would say best amp. I'm going to give you two. I have an old matchless DC-30 that I've had a few of over the years. And it took me a long time to realize how amazing the amp is. I also have a mid-70s Master Volume Marshall.
Okay.
It's called a Leadmaster 100, and it's orange. It's wrapped in orange. It's orange Tolex. It's awesome. And then for years, I had an early 70s four-input Marshall that it belonged to a buddy of mine that I had to give back. The problem with having a studio is that everybody lets you use their gear, like store their gear.
Yeah.
And so like, if I never moved my studio, I probably would have had that amp for another 20 years. If you move your studio, you got to give all the shit back.
So, there you go. You ever sell a guitar you wish you can get back?
A lot.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, God, in the early 90s, you could buy 60s Fenders for nothing, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I can't even remember. Some of the guitars that kind of came through the little camps that, like, bands that I was playing in, 335s, Les Pauls, things like that. I still have never owned an early 60s Strat, which is the dream guitar to me.
But you don't, do you have a Strat now?
I do. I actually have a Nash Strat.
You're really a fan of those guitars, the Nash. They're out of Nashville, aren't they?
Nope. He's in Seattle. Somewhere outside of Seattle, Washington. Yeah.
That's funny. Why I thought he was in Nash. I guess I was in Carter Vintage. I guess he had a bunch of them there one day, but that's just because it's Nashville and there's tons of guitars, I guess.
Could be, yeah.
I don't know why I assumed.
There's that, the Danicaster dude is in Nashville. He does a similar thing.
Yes, yes.
There's a lot of people that are doing, repro guitars, I suppose.
Really good, a lot of boutique, really good vintage builders. Desert Island Discs, Lawrence.
This is the question that's been giving me anxiety.
No particular order, man, just for now. You could change tomorrow.
Okay, let's say, I got three. Oh shit. The thing is that when I read the question, I can't come up with any. Now that I'm answering the question, I can come up with 10. I think.
Yeah. That's always,
I'm going to say Physical Graffiti.
Okay. I figured you'd say Led Zeppelin 1 for Good Times Bad.
No, I mean, I love Zeppelin 1, but Physical Graffiti is a double album. So I get two for the price of one there.
That's the most popular Zeppelin album, by the way.
Is that right?
For the answer to this question, anyway, yes.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's good reason for it.
Yeah, it's a great album.
Toss up between The Wall and Dark Side of the Moon. Let's go with The Wall.
Interesting.
Stick with the double album theme. and then I'm going to take off the double album theme, and I'm going to say Ghost in the Machine.
Oh, cool. That's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah. Oh, man, that record is powerful.
Yeah, good record, man.
I don't know when the last time you heard that record is, but, in fact, Adam and I have this conversation a lot. That was a mainstream record, right? I mean, there were hits.
Very much.
Hits off that record. I listened to it, and I was probably maybe sixth, maybe seventh grade when that record came out, and listened to it nonstop. And I can listen to that record today with all of the experience and musical knowledge that I have, and it still blows my mind how intense and how deep that record is.
I just wrote it down because it's been a long time since I've listened to it, so I'm going to check it out this week.
And it's just like, it's spooky and mysterious sounding, like even down to the record cover. It's just like, I don't know. It's just great. That's just it.
All
and,
right.
Yeah. And such a far, and so on some level, so far removed from like Outlandish Deer Moore and like the early records.
Yeah, just, everything they did was really intense, was musically very deep,
But there's such a sense of exploration to me, what I loved about those records. All those records at that time.
Yeah, very much.
Nothing was super formatted, it was creative, basically.
Well, you mentioned like YYZ before. God, that stuff was like nuts, man, musically,
Loved it. Still love it. I'll go to the mat and debate Rush. So it's so polarizing. But I mean, if you tell me you don't like Rush, I got a problem with you.
Well, the thing is, that's three guys making all that music.
Awesome.
That's pretty nuts.
When I was a kid and like listened to Exit Stage Left and like just mind blowing. Still blows my mind. Man, another band that, if you put out any of that stuff today, it's not getting on the radio. That's what they were playing on the radio at the
time. Yeah, that's a good point. But nothing gets on the radio now. It's like there's like a format, I think, of the songs that are on the radio. I don't even know. I don't listen to the radio. I'm speaking out of school when it comes down to it. I haven't listened to the radio in years.
Understood. Classic. It's now they call it classic rock. It wasn't classic rock then.
No, it's rock, man. It's just rock. All right. Questions. These are the tough ones, man. Most important things that you've learned about yourself through your journey, man.
Oh, boy. I feel like we talked about them on some level. How to narrow it down to a sentence is the tricky part. Most important thing. I don't know. I'd say I'm still learning them. It's like the process, I suppose. I suppose if I had to answer that question, it's just patience in the process.
Fair enough, man.
Alliteration to boot.
Are you a rule breaker or a rule follower?
I'd say, depending on what it is, I probably stay a little more between the lines than I should. I guess I would probably put myself in the rule follower, but not necessarily a follower, but a good soldier, if you will.
Yeah, getcha.
I mean, I want to know the rules. And, there's all the, there's a lot that goes with that too, for sure.
Something or someone you miss from your childhood?
Oh, man. Something or someone I miss from my childhood. Define childhood.
For me or for you?
Sure, for me.
Man, whatever feels like you're a kid. To me, that's what I would think.
Yeah, I guess.
You could be 18. That's a childhood.
Something or something I miss.
Something or someone.
Something or someone, right. I guess just, I don't know. I mean, I feel good about all of it being in the past, and I feel all good about how it was in the present at the time.
Cool. When you're having a bad day, what do you do to make yourself feel better?
Oh, man. These are the hard ones.
Dude, you're like rapid fire, man. Eli, you got to get your mojo back here.
Not enough. Sometimes when I'm having a bad day, I just get so buried in it, I don't even realize I'm having a bad day.
Yeah.
I mean, the things that I should do or the things that I do do?
Things that you do, man.
I don't know, escape out of it somehow. Or just grin and bear it until the next day.
Yeah. That's a common, most important person in your life.
Oh my God. I guess everybody in my, I mean, everybody in my immediate family. But although that said, you know, I feel like that the people that are in my life are all very important. You know what I mean? I don't have a whole lot of filler in my life, and the people that I do are all very close and all, you know, very genuine. Very cool. I don't want to use the word blessed because it gets hashtagged too often.
Does it?
But oh my God, you're joking, obviously. So that and office for the day. But I feel like that I'm super fortunate to have the people in my life that I do, from my immediate family to my, you know, my wife and baby, and I have a unbelievable group of friends.
That's cool, man. I'm happy for you.
All who have, you know, do, you know, what we're talking about.
Hashtag blessed.
That's right. Or hashtag gratitude.
That one I hate. I see that all the time.
Oh, like, God. You know, or hashtag, how did I get so cynical?
You know what I want to see? I want to see someone like having a fucking horrible day and then say hashtag gratitude.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Who's had the biggest influence on you, both musically and then personally?
Whew. I mean, I would say, you know, influence. I mean, I'd have to say, you know, my parents and my immediate family, you know, my parents have always been super, super supportive, and, you know, maybe even to a fault, you know? So, you know, sometimes if you tell somebody they can't do something, then they do it even harder, faster, and better. My parents have always been super supportive of me. So
that's cool.
I'll give it that.
And that's the number one thing all players have in common, that they had supportive parents.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, the number one by a long shot. Even if there was like severe dysfunction in the family, there was if they had supportive parents, and I'd say over 99% of the people I've spoken to.
I mean, it's not the norm necessarily. Yeah. Particularly, you know, if you've got, like, you know, post-depression era, you know, values happening in your family dynamic. Yeah. And then for your, and I had older parents also, which was somewhat unique about my situation. Mm. But, I mean, the attitude was you can do it, even if you, you know, and the irony is that in music, you want to be told you can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, like, righteous indignation is very good fuel.
That's right.
Speaking of your folks, what's the most important thing your dad and your mom taught you, separate?
Oh, man. It's interesting. You know, my dad read this at my wedding was The Road Less Traveled.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, you know, just do stay your course. And I would say my mom. My mom definitely taught me a lot of emotional lessons, I suppose. You know what I mean? Like I said, she was a therapist, so there was good therapy happening there.
You know what though, man? That's really good, because most parents are so dysfunctional that, you know, the fact that she knew how to tell you, okay, here's how you communicate those emotions.
Right.
That's a huge
plus. It took a while. I mean, it certainly took a while.
Yeah. Of course. Goes back to the thing. It's not day one that something happens. It's always, you know, a lot of work to get shit done.
That's right. Yeah.
Any hobbies or interests outside of music?
I wish I could play golf every day.
Oh, you like golf?
It's hard to do with a kid. I love golf. Yeah,
that's cool, man.
I should add. This is where I should out Adam Zeman, because Adam might be the best golfer I've ever seen.
Really?
Not truthfully, but I've seen some pretty good golfers. But Adam is a rip shit golfer.
Interesting, because I think
why he doesn't brag about that, I just have no idea.
No, he didn't say anything. I think he told me the thing he likes doing. I can't 100% remember. I don't think he said cooking, maybe.
That's funny. That sounds like him bullshitting you.
Yeah.
He doesn't do it that much, but he did it a lot as a kid. It's like, you know, it's the riding a bike thing. You know? He's just so fluid with it. But I like to say physically active, although there was a time where I was doing a lot of cycling also. In fact, I rode my bike with my brother from basically like all through Big Sur down to Santa Barbara. We did it a couple times, in fact. And then I broke my arm on the bike, and that seemed like an occupational hazard.
Yeah, man.
So breaking your arm is not fun.
How far is that from Big Sur down to?
We started in Carmel area, uh-huh. and then all through Big Sur, all through like San Simeon zone. I think it was probably, you know, maybe somewhere around 300 miles, maybe a little less.
Holy shit. That's like some serious bike riding, man.
Yeah. But it's awesome.
Wow. God, like,
amazing. I mean, basically it's not like, you know, you ride 80 miles in a day and then we'd sleep in beds. You know what I mean? Like sleep at a hotel and eat your face off and drink as much beer as you could and then get up the next morning and
do it again. That's a lot of riding though, man. That's wow.
Yeah. It's awesome.
That's great. Congratulations. Amazing. Toughest decision you've ever had to make or most difficult thing you've ever had to do?
Wow. The toughest decision I've ever had. I don't like to make decisions. That's more true than you know, than you'll realize. But the toughest decision, I guess, any of those situations of like, you know, leaving Atlanta to go to Boston was a huge one, mm-hmm. and scary. You know, for a kid growing up in Atlanta, like I got to Boston, man, I may as well have been on the moon.
Yeah.
And then the same for going to LA.
Yeah.
But all great decisions ultimately. Coming here wasn't an easy decision.
Yeah.
Although on some level it was, you know, just again, change is good. So.
All right. So last question, biggest change in your personality over the last 10 years and how much of this change has been intentional and deliberate and how much is it just a natural part of aging?
I would say yes. I'm just kidding.
I want to call my secret.
I think probably the biggest change is, you know, kind of what we were saying before, just kind of staying in your lane and feeling, you know, kind of confident about what you're doing and, you know, probably more positive, more optimistic. And it's certainly effort driven. You know, I mean, we could even say hashtag grateful.
Hashtag thank goodness. You know what? Exactly. Just for whatever it's worth, first of all, thank you. But when you've every time you said staying in your lane, you're like energy on that, and it's like your confidence has been like boom. So it's like it's the real deal, man. So it comes out like that. So good for you.
Yeah,
dude, I can't thank you enough for your time.
Work in progress, by the way, and you know it's yeah. That's just again, like I think it's like. Being okay with where you are and what you're doing without feeling too overwhelmed by how cool and how much amazing stuff everybody else is doing. If that makes sense.
Totally, man. I hear you. Lawrence, I can't thank you enough for everything. I really enjoyed this. This is a great hang. I really appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. I'm honored to be on here with some of the company that I'm amongst.
Thanks, man. Well, the pleasure was mine. And I want to tell people where to find you. It's Lawrence Katz, K-A-T-Z. You can check him out on Instagram where he'll be Hashtag gratitude. Like,
office for the day. Today's office, I think it is.
The Lawrence
Cats. Don't leave blessed out
there. And hashtag blessed. Yes. It's at the Lawrence Cats, LAWRENCE, of course. Check out the Boss Tones last record. It's very cool. While we're at it, really good record. And the Boss Tones are actually touring again after the first of the new year. So check them out. And can I tell people to come say hello to you if they see you at the show? And say, hey, I heard your interview.
Always.
And you're a fucking stud. Hashtag thank goodness.
Say hello to me even not at the show.
There you go. Come see Lawrence Cass and say hello to him.
Anywhere. I'm always available for a hello.
Anywhere.
Can I get my phone number out on this?
He's always available for a hello. And if you have any good recommendations on some new baby food, he's down to hear that. For toddler. It's not even baby now. It's toddler, isn't it?
She's a toddler, man. She's ready to go. She's 2 years old, basically.
Rock and rolling. Dude, I can't thank you enough. This is really cool. I wish you a lot of luck. You know, congratulations and everything with the baby and with the new move to Philly. And when you're coming down here to the Boston's, I will fucking hit you up and say hello in person for sure.
Please do. I'd be happy to do it.
Oh, and
hey, thank you. That was awesome. I'm super. I think this might be this is the first podcast I've ever done.
Oh, I broke your cherry. I hope I was gentle.
That's right. You were very
And check out, please, before I forget, sorry, man, The Whole Damn Mess. Great band. Really good band. And if those guys are touring, you definitely want to see them as well. And check out the new record. I'm sorry, it's Queen and the... Queen and the Outcast. And check out the video. The reason why I didn't know is because I watched all the videos on YouTube. I'm becoming like everyone. I'm watching videos on YouTube. But you know what I did? I just signed up. I've never done it in my life. I felt like... I was a traitor. I just bought Apple Music, like streaming. And as much as I hate to admit it, I can understand why it's like people do it. It's like the whole world musically is now in my computer. It's crazy, man.
I do the Spotify thing, but it's the access is insane.
It's, you know, I originally did it because a lot of guests come on and they have something to promote. And I felt like I was really annoying people, like, oh, send me the tracks. And I'm like, man, let me just make everyone's life easier and just, you know, and then my kids are all buying it on their own. And I'm like, wait a minute, I get a family plan. You guys don't have to pay anything. And it's $5 a month more for me, for all of you. So I'm like, great, this is a win. And I'm really happy with it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so check out.
We're not talking about records anymore.
No, I know.
We're not walking to the record store anymore to get, to walk home with Ozzy Osbourne, Blizzard of Oz.
Used copy, $4.99.
That was a good day.
There you go. Dude, I appreciate it. Thank you for everything. Everybody, thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this interview, please share it with a friend on your social media channels. We appreciate your support. Thanks again to Lawrence Cats. I really had a good time. Thank you for spending time with us. I appreciate it. And check him out on the road with The Whole Damn Mess and with the Boss Tones. And check him out on Instagram at the Lawrence Cats. Make sure you go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get on our newsletter list so you and I can connect. And most important, remember that happiness is a choice, so choose wisely. Be nice, go play your guitar, and have fun. Till next time, peace and love, everybody. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.